Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be back with you today as we continue our week-long discussion of cultural diversity. And we'd like to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. Thanks to Concordia University for making this show a reality. So if you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuoam.org. Go to the sponsor section, click on Concordia University, Wisconsin right there. It'll take you to their website. You can learn all about them. So joining us in the studio today, we have Pastor Paul Shaw. Welcome, Pastor Shaw.
Thank you.
And Mrs. Becky Shaw joining us here. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you.
And they are from Light of Christ Chinese Lutheran Mission. Did I get that right? Right here in Olivet or St. Louis area here in Missouri. So today we get to continue our discussion on cultural diversity. We've been asking all week long, we've been asking the question, how do you handle those situations when your child says something, makes some embarrassing comment or asks a question in public? You know, mommy, that person sounds funny or he looks different. How do you handle those situations? So we're going to get into that today as we learn about Chinese culture today. So Pastor Paul, tell us a little bit about where you were born and when you came to the U.S.
I was born in Taiwan. I came to the United States in 1991 to 1999. I got my degree and then I went back to Taiwan to teach in university. And then I got a call to 2006. To the Light of Christ Chinese Mission under Emmanuel Lutheran Church until right now.
And you're here right now, and thanks be to God for that. And Becky, how did you become a part of Chinese culture? How did the Shaw family come about?
My family, I grew up in a Christian family, and my parents sponsored missionaries even before that was that before TIM or whatever it's called now was in existence. But I was always, that always kind of sparked my interest in missions. And so after I was a DCE in Iowa for a few years, information about, what was it called? The Overseas Volunteer Youth Ministry Program. I'm dating myself now. came across my desk and they said, please suggest someone. And I thought, I don't know anyone except me. So anyway, I applied and long story short, I went to Hong Kong for 2 years and then they needed a director in Taiwan. And, I was the new director. And, so that's how I met my husband and,
And the rest is history.
Yes, it is.
Wonderful. So how long did it take you did you learn the language before you went to Hong Kong and then Taiwan?
No, actually they speak different languages too. Okay. Hong Kong, people in Hong Kong speak Cantonese and in Taiwan, actually they speak Taiwanese and Mandarin. But Mandarin is the educational language. So that's what I learned when I first got there. How long did it take? I'm still learning. So, I don't know.
I was pretty impressed when I called the office and got your voicemail in English. And now is that Mandarin or Cantonese what do you speak usually here?
Mandarin. I cannot speak Cantonese. I can understand a little teeny bit, but I speak and understand Mandarin better.
Excellent. So you met in Taiwan, is that correct?
Correct.
While you were serving there. And then in 2006, well, you ended up back here at Light of Christ, correct?
Well, when you say back here, I'm not sure what you mean, but I'd never lived in St. Louis or anything. So it was a whole new thing for both of us.
Okay. So you ended up here. I guess it wouldn't be back here for those of us here in St. Louis. I always think of it as back here. But yes, so you ended up here in St. Louis at Light of Christ. And how did you know anything about the Chinese Lutheran mission here in St. Louis prior to that, Pastor Paul? Were you aware that there was even someone thinking about Chinese ministry here in St. Louis?
One of my classmates, Pastor Lau, he was a pastor in Light of Christ. And since from him, I know the Light of Christ Chinese mission. So in that time, I feel God called me back to United States to have a Chinese mission here.
So you packed up and moved across the world to preach the good news of Jesus to people in your own language, but on the other side of the world. I'm sure that had to be a very, was it frightening? Was it scary to think about moving from your home to the U.S. and into a totally different culture, but yet still be connected with people from your own culture?
Yeah, since I studied in the United States since 1991 to 1999, we have an experience of sharing gospel to the Chinese people in the campus. In our home, we have a Bible study, and people continue to believe in Jesus, and was baptized. And so that's encouraged us.
Sure.
And come back to.
So your experience here was encouraging and motivating to accept that call and come serve here.
Mm.
Good. Let's delve into Chinese culture. We've talked a little bit about your call here. What similarities? You've both lived in American culture now and in Chinese culture. What similarities do you see? Becky, what similarities do you see between American culture and Chinese culture?
Well, I think basically people are the same. They all want love. They all want success. They all want to be respected. They want to be able to accomplish their goals. They want a good life, so to speak. And so a lot of things are similar in that sense. And I think that's, and as my husband and I said when we were talking about this, everybody's a sinner and everybody needs Jesus. So that's, you know, that's kind of, we're in that sense, we're definitely all the same.
And Pastor Paul, any differences? What do you see as maybe the biggest difference between your home and Chinese culture and now your home here in the United States? Do you see any big differences culturally?
In Taiwan, there is a lot of temple, and here a lot of church.
Okay, so a lot of temples in Taiwan and here a lot of churches. Let's talk about that. What is the most common or primary religion in China or in Taiwan?
Buddhism and Taoism and Confucianism and folk religion, including the ancient worship.
So worship of all kinds of different gods, false gods.
Yes.
And how common is it here? I mean, how common is it there? Is it, you know, is it primarily everyone? Would you say that most households follow one of those religions?
Sometimes people don't know who they worship. They just a kind of combine. They worship Buddhism, they worship Taoism, they worship folk religion, all put it together. My family in that way too.
So how is the triune God, how are the scriptures received? How is the Christian faith received? Becky, serving as a missionary in that part of the world, what did you have to think about when bringing the message of Jesus? Jesus the Christ, the Savior of the world. What did you have to think about when bringing that into the Chinese culture?
One, because there are many gods, and they don't have capital letters and small letters like we do in English, because they use Chinese characters. In Taiwan is where we were. In China, they use characters too, but they also have a unified spelling alphabet. But anyway, it doesn't have capital and small letters. But anyway, so the words for God or the highest deity or the highest emperor, some of the translations that we would use in the Bible, or that were used in the Bible, when you were talking to people, after I was there a while and understood some of that, I felt, oh, they don't really understand that I'm talking about Jesus and, you know, the triune God. And so I started using Jesus instead of just saying God. And I think then it was more clear to them. And another thing, too, is that it's a cultural thing. And so even though we would work with students, they were still under their parents' authority. And sometimes the students would believe in Jesus. But their parents, you know, because of worshiping the ancestors, they were afraid to have their children, or even them, you know, if it was the mom or the dad, even said, wow, this makes sense, to for them to believe or really make that, you know, decision to be baptized. You know, their belief was one thing, but then that decision to be baptized, they knew there was something special happening in baptism, because that was the step that was more difficult for them to get to. So anyway, that was some of the thing. And so
you bring up the differences in languages, and you mentioned that, talking about God, the word God, no capitalization. So that word can be used very generically. It sounds like in the Mandarin language, is there a word for, what is the word for Jesus in Mandarin?
Yesu.
Yesu. Which is fairly universal.
It is.
And is it common for people to know who, when you use that term, is it common for people in Taiwan to know who you're talking about when you say Yesu?
Yes.
I would say some yes, some no, right? Or maybe we've worked with mainland or Chinese people more, but some of them it's... they might have heard it, but they think he's one of several, too. Yeah. One of several gods or teachers or whatever.
And how do you go about teaching about that, Pastor? How do you teach that there is only one God? I mean, that's got to be teaching a culture that has so many gods, so many false gods. How do you go about teaching that there is only one God?
That's a good question. Yeah.
What are the challenges you face when trying to teach about that?
In Taiwan, there are so many gods. So teach one God. They think, how you say your God is the only God.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk a lot just from the by faith. Talk a lot from the Bible to say there is only one God.
Mm-hmm.
We believe because the Bible says this. And that's a challenge too. But for the China, people from China, they think there is no God. So that's different. But in their mind, they still, even they say there is no God, but in their mind, they still, deeply in their mind, they still think there is a God.
So it's very easy, I'm sure, in that culture to confuse and to misunderstand who Jesus is without much teaching about it. So,
and lots of times, just want to interject here, the starting point in Taiwan, at least when we were there, when I was there the first time, was people really want to learn English. And so we would have English Bible studies. And that's how we kind of got in and started, you know, dialogues or conversations. And of course, it's more difficult to understand things in another language, your second or third, whatever number it is of language. But then, you know, once if there's other Chinese people who are Christians there, or you missionaries gotten to a point where they can explain things that they're reading in the English Bible in Chinese, then there's, you know, that opportunity just keeps growing. And God's word really is what has the power mm-hmm. to convince people of the truth.
Amen. Well, let's go now. Let's bring that culture here. Now you're here in the United States and working with and serving at Light of Christ. What is the draw? Obviously, the gospel is, and the work of the Holy Spirit is what makes the believers who they are. How do you connect with others from Chinese culture here in the Midwest alone, here in the St. Louis area? How do they find out about you? How do you get connected, and how do they end up being connected with Light of Christ?
Well, we do have a website, and some people have found Light of Christ through the website. In the Chinese newspaper, all the churches are listed, and so in Chinese newspaper, so it's in Chinese.
Uh-huh.
They can, that's near my house or whatever. And our church has, since before we came, there's a woman who teaches citizenship class, and I think that's how Pastor Lau started things, was with English classes. And so even on Sunday morning, we have an English Bible study and a Chinese Bible study. But the biggest blessing has been the people that are already going there.
Uh-huh.
They have coworkers.
Sure.
They have friends. They have neighbors. They have relatives. And that's one of the biggest things. And we also have, you know, like if somebody, like someone will say, they'll email and they'll say, there's a new family in town. They need some furniture. So I'll send out an email and I'll say, does anybody have any furniture? Or I'll email, put a plea in at Emmanuel and say, does anybody have furniture? Or, you know, things like that. Or driving classes, somebody would be willing to help someone learn to drive. So those helping things are very impressive to the people who come from mainland China, yeah.
Do you find that there are immigrants who seek you out right away? That there are folks who are immigrated to the U.S. and they find you, you know, they seek you out right away. Is that the case, or is it usually somebody who's been here for a while, or just kind of a mix?
I don't remember if it was 4, let's see. I don't remember how many years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I got an email from someone. And, well, actually, International Student Ministry, maybe some people know mm-hmm. about that.
Absolutely.
And they work with the universities here, and they are, all their activities are on the website that WashU has for international students. And it's probably on other websites now, but at that time I knew it was on WashU because this student was going to be at WashU for a year. He got online and found out about this parenting class that we were having at our church before he even came here. And so he had registered before he even got here. And so he was already primed to go. And then when his wife, I think the class started a day or two after his wife arrived. And I think they actually came, even though they were jet lag, experiencing jet lag, they came to the very first class. But, and you know, God works. They were baptized 2 or 3 months later.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was really, really neat. And they started, after they went back to China, they started, a parenting class in a really small Bible study group in their home.
And some people, through that, their homes gathering, believe in Jesus.
So they're telling other people, going back and telling other people about Jesus. And so the good news spreads as God enables them to go and tell the good news. Is that risky when they go back to China, to go back and talk about Jesus? Maybe not so much in their personal relationships, but what are the dangers that they encounter going back to China and talking about Jesus?
Some area more control.
Mm-hmm.
In some area, more loose. I remember when all the older gentleman. He believed in Jesus, and he hesitated to be baptized. And finally, he decided to be baptized because he still needed to get a salary from the communist.
So he decided to be baptized even.
Yes, but he asked to be private baptized.
Oh, he asked it to be private because there was a danger.
Yeah, but one man, when he came to the United States. We have a summer retreat, and he come with their children to join our summer retreat. And from the talking, I said, "Yeah, you seem to believe in Jesus." And he said, "Yes, but I cannot be baptized." But I said, "Why?" He said, he's still working in the community, have a higher position. And then he continued to join our church.
Mm-hmm.
One day we have baptized some people. And after that, he and his wife come say, "We both wanted to be baptized."
And after, what they said was they would just share privately with friends or relatives as the opportunity arose. And
sure.
I think they don't even know exactly what it's going to be like. I know when we email them, we're very careful, you know, what we say and don't say. So.
Sure. I think that's something as someone growing up in the United States and in our culture, in our free society, something that I, and I'm sure most of us take for granted, that we can freely receive this gift of baptism without any danger, you know, without any imminent danger, without any risks, really. It's just mind-boggling to me to what it would be like to live in a culture, in a society where it would be dangerous in some sense to receive the free gifts of God, especially a gift in which he imparts his grace, his love, you know, his forgiveness. I just can't even fathom that. So I thank you for being here today to help me think through these things, and our listeners as well. I really appreciate you walking us through this. We're going to take a break in just a minute here. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about we've talked about the religion and the differences in between Chinese culture and U.S. culture. Let's talk about family life and food and all those things that everybody, I love talking about food. Not that I certainly love talking about Jesus, but he is the giver of all good gifts, including food. So we'll talk about that when we come back right here on Faith and Family. Stick around.
University Mequon, Wisconsin overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
You've heard touching stories of reunions between birth mothers and their children who were adopted, but this one will stand out in your mind. Betty Morrell was adopted into a wonderful family, but her parents died when she was in her 20s. A slip of the tongue while speaking with an aunt changed Betty's world. She found out what her birth name was and where she was born, but still, her search came up empty. Fast forward to the present when Betty's 82 years old. With the assistance of an online company, she finally found her mother's name. Lena Pierce is 96 and still living. What a remarkable and joyous reunion. Lena was only 14 when Betty was born and the state took her away. As for Betty, she said, "My life is complete."
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed more informed than you've ever been.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Who are KFUO Day sponsors? They're people like you. They're listeners who appreciate and support the Lord's work in broadcasting the good news of Jesus Christ every day. For more information on becoming a KFUO Day sponsor, contact Mary Schmidt at 314-996-1518 or Joni Harwell at 314-996-1512 or email us to find out more at gifts@kfuo.org.
If you have a question about the LCMS, contact the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Church Information Center, and you'll be connected with a real person who can help you find the answer. Call 1-888-THE-LCMS or 1-888-843-5267 or email them infocenter@lcms.org. Helping you with your questions and finding you resources, the LCMS Church Information Center.
Join Worldwide KFUO and Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County for live Lenten worship on Wednesdays throughout the season of Lent. The broadcasts begin at 11 a.m. with Pastors Dennis Castens and Joe Ferguson presiding over midweek Lenten worship leading up to Easter Sunday. Peace Lutheran Church, located at 737 Barracks View Road in South County, invites you to join these Lenten worship services in person or on Worldwide KFUO at kfuo.org, the messenger of good news.
Worldwide KFUO at kfuo.org. Listen anywhere in the world on your computer and laptops. KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Great to be with you today as we're talking about cultural diversity with Pastor Paul and Becky Shaw from Light of Christ Chinese Lutheran Mission right here in St. Louis area. And before the break, we were talking about some of the differences, particularly when it comes to religion in Chinese culture and in American culture. And now, during the break, we were discussing differences in foods. And just to clear the air, I think we've affirmed that Chinese restaurants in the United States are not typical Chinese food. Is that right, Pastor Paul?
Most Chinese food here are Americanized food.
Very Americanized. So what does a typical day look like when it comes to food in Chinese culture? We were talking during the break a little bit about that. Becky, what is a typical day in terms of meals look like?
Rice. It depends upon the family, but if the family eats breakfast at home, it's going to be rice, sometimes soupy rice, more like rice porridge, no flavor whatsoever. But then they'll add like peanuts or dried fish or vegetables or other little things that I can't even remember anymore. But if a person would, you know, leave home without eating breakfast and then get it on the street, like in Taiwan, you can do that very, very easily. You could get a variety of things, soybean milk, hot or cold. You could get steamed bread, different flavors, sweet fillings or plain or whole wheat or, and then they'd have these grease sticks is what they called them. They're just kind of like deep fat fried donuts, but long, like maybe 12 inches long, and they were real flaky. Then, you know, there were bakeries and they would be open like for people to get bread. Bread is probably more common for breakfast than like cereal. They also sometimes would put egg inside like a one of those steam breads. And they typically do not drink with their meal. Although they do like for breakfast, some families, all they do is they drink milk for breakfast, like at home. Then lunch depends upon the situation. Usually what happens the night before at home is everybody gets out their tin lunch, covered lunch box, and puts leftovers in there, rice and whatever vegetables are left over, and then puts it in the refrigerator and then takes it to school and puts it in a refrigerator there. And then when it's getting closer to lunchtime, they put it in a steamer and then everyone has hot lunch. But if that's not the situation and people eat out, there's a variety. There are noodle stands, noodle shops. There are shops that have rice and then a whole bunch of dishes like vegetable and meat dishes, and then you choose whatever you choose has a different price, and then you just, it's like a cafeteria style, I would say. And then for dinner, generally like someone at home would cook, usually the mom would cook, and sometimes she will buy the food she's going to cook for that evening meal on the way home from work and then make it. So lots of times people aren't eating till 7 or 8 p.m. But and if people get home at different times, they have different schedules, then they'll just cook the food whenever it gets cooked and then it's left on the table. Sometimes they put a little looks like a top of a screened umbrella top over it so the flies and bugs don't get into it. And then whenever somebody gets home, they just eat. And the rice is usually hot, but the vegetables, you know, they get lukewarm because they're sitting out. And so that's kind of typical, at least my experience when I was in Taiwan. Here, I do not know. I think families do things a little bit more American, especially for breakfast.
More Cheerios.
Yes, I think so.
Pastor Paul, what was your favorite meal? What was your favorite food growing up in Taiwan?
Most time we eat the rice.
Rice.
And tofu.
Yeah, tofu.
And was that your favorite? What did you really like? What was a special treat?
That's what he likes.
That's
the
your
most.
Favorite?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We've talked about meals and you've talked about how the family plays a role in that meal. How does the household look different, or how does it look the same? Who growing up in Taiwan, who was in your household? Here in the Midwest, it's common for maybe mom and dad and some kids. But, you know, a lot of the cultures we've been talking to this week are very intergenerational, where grandma and grandpa might live in the same house too. Was that common where you lived?
A lot of family has three generations live together.
Three generations?
Yes. And my family, we not live together because my grandpa, grandma already died. And my mom died earlier too. So we just, my family and my kids.
Mm-hmm. But typically it's three generations.
And one of the main reasons is because in Chinese culture, it's very important to take care of the elderly, the parents, after they retire or when they are unable to care for themselves. And at the same time, and this happens here in America also, that the grandparents become babysitters when both of the parents work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's different, but yet there are some similarities as well. Grandparents are involved, but in different ways. Yeah,
they actually live in the same home. Mm-hmm. They have a room. Yeah.
So everybody lives together. That seems so. Where I grew up, that seems it wasn't totally unheard of for a grandma or grandpa to live, with a family. But it does seem so kind of foreign in a sense. It wasn't common. It wasn't every day that that my friends had their grandparents living with them. We would go visit grandma and grandpa.
Right.
As very much so Midwestern culture is. What about education? How is education similar or different? Here in the U.S., probably the most common is public school system or parochial or private school or Christian school system that's graded, and children start school usually with maybe preschool, but definitely by kindergarten, so around age 5, and go up through 12th grade, which is usually around 17, 18. And then many go on to college, but not all go on to higher education. What's the education system like, and how is it structured in Taiwan and in Chinese culture?
Preschool need to pay by themselves. And the kindergarten, I think recently maybe changed government pay. Before I come here, government still not pay, but recently, I think the government paid off kindergarten. And primary school have 6 years, and junior high school 3 years, and high school 3 years. Ours, junior high school 4 years. So a little difference.
Mm-hmm.
But
high school
in Taiwan 3 years. But in here, 4 years.
But it still ends up to 12 years of
total
school.
Total 12.
What about the school day? Here, it's anywhere from 7 to 8 hours usually.
Most students, they come to school. When I was a student, we need to come to school 7:30. And then come to school, study in the classroom. And at 8:30, have a meeting, and at 8:20 we start. And most of we stay school in about 5 o'clock, and after 5 o'clock still have after school program. Some people send their kids to study in a after school program.
So you'd start as early as 7:30, and then go until 5.
They would get to school and study or eat breakfast. But then I think most schools also had a time when they would sweep the floor and clean the blackboard and do things like that for the teacher. So that was part of it, too. And then what you said, there was a class meeting?
All the students need to go together and have something to announcement for all the school. I don't know right now, but when I was a student, mm-hmm. they do this every day.
However, we have to remember that they have an hour and a half for lunch.
Wow.
Not because it takes so long to steam the food, but because they nap.
Uh-huh.
They put their heads down on the desk, and you can hear snoring sometimes. It's because it's just the way the culture is. Mm-hmm. Offices will close for 1.5 to 2 hours during the middle of the day. I remember having to go once to the visa office or something, and there was a screen. We could see into the office, and there was a screen. It was pulled down. Nobody could get in. All of us were waiting outside, and we could see people rousing from their midday nap because they stay up late. They need that nap. That's kind of the way it's very cultural. It's the way the culture is.
The Chinese people really emphasize the education.
Mm-hmm.
From the early time, they like their kids succeed in education, in academic.
Why is education so important in Chinese culture?
They think this is a way they to become successful in different areas.
Right, and even though I, you know, talked about their nap, they do spend a lot of time. I mean, they're and it's also more authoritarian. The teacher lectures. The students don't really. There's not a whole lot of interaction. You know, not very much small group discussion. That would be very innovative and uncommon. And also, there's kind of a set way to do things. I remember the first year our family lived in Taiwan, my husband wanted them to go to the local elementary school. And we tried that for a year. And so they took art class and music class and PE. I can't remember if there was another one or not. But anyway, the art class, one of our daughters was a little bit upset because she had not drawn the picture exactly the way the teacher had drawn it, and she got a lower grade. And, you know, so it's just the way they do it. It's more uniform thing. They wear uniforms, and the teaching is more uniform. You know, this is the answer. This is the way you do it. These are the examples. And it, yeah.
And I want to talk about that too in just a second. I want to talk about dress and those types of things and clothes. If you're listening today and have a question for our guests, Pastor Paul and Becky Shaw from Light of Christ Chinese Lutheran Mission, and we're talking about Chinese culture today. If you have a question, you're welcome to join the conversation. Here in the St. Louis area, you can call 314-821-0850, or outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727, or you can email your questions or comments to family@kfuo.org. Let's talk about dress and clothes. Here in the U.S., clothes and fashion play an important role, and I'm sure, you know, in other cultures. What's typical dress like for, talking about students in education, what's a typical dress like for a grade school student? Can they just, in the public schools, can they just wear anything like a typical American would in most public schools?
Right now, I don't know. But before, they just need a uniform. Everybody the same. Mm-hmm. But right now I come to here about 7 years. I don't know if they change it or not.
Could be different now.
Even their hairstyle.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was a student, they cannot have too much hair on the head. The girl hair just have a limitation, but a student kind of wanted to be changed. So right now maybe change.
So even not only dress but hairstyle was also somewhat restricted.
Yeah, but right now maybe a little change.
Mm-hmm. What about dress now for when families come from Chinese culture to American culture? Is it pretty similar? Do they when they come into American culture here, do they find themselves, you know, comfortable with American dress, or is it different at all for them?
I think they pretty much wear the same style of clothes. However, I think that their dress is a little bit more conservative in the sense of maybe not short as shorts. One thing that I've noticed, though, is that when Chinese people are at home, they often wear really casual clothes like sweatpants and t-shirts or whatever. But if they're going to go out, they will change their clothes and wear, you know, high heels, wear a skirt, really dress up to go out. In fact, sometimes at church, I will go to church with my pair of blue jeans and a nice shirt, and the other women will come in their skirts and heels and, you know, nice blouses and jewelry, you know. And so I think that's part of, you know, I think it comes from in the, you know, years ago when people didn't have very many clothes, but when they went out, they wanted to present their best. Mm-hmm. And so they, that's what they, and even going on a trip, like when I'm on an airplane, I want comfortable. They will dress up on an airplane and I would be freezing and all that. But they're, but that's part of their culture. They really, you know, pay attention to how they present themselves and how they what other people see them to be. They want to give a good impression of their country and themselves.
Hmm. Here, I've lived in a couple of metropolitan areas besides St. Louis, and in most of the cities that I've lived near have always had kind of pockets, cultural pockets or neighborhoods. You know, here in St. Louis, we have some of those as well. Is there a very Chinese community here in St. Louis? I know in Chicago there is, and in other cities certainly. Would you say that that's the case here in St. Louis, or are most of the Chinese families kind of spread out all over the place? When it comes to the families that you serve at Light of Christ, are they coming from all over, or are they from a particular neighborhood?
If the people are here short-term, or they come here to do research or postdoc work or mm-hmm. something like that, and they're not certain how long it's going to be, they tend to migrate to similar places where the rent isn't as expensive for obvious reasons, and then where there are more Chinese people, so they have a little bit of that support. A lot. There's one area in Clayton. It's like four or five rows of apartments. A fair number of Light of Christ members live there. There was a place near Walmart that also had a lot of Chinese people living. Once they have, you know, become established, they've gotten a green card, they know that their job at the university or their job wherever is more stable, and they would be staying, then they will buy a house, and that's much more varied. There's Ladue School District is in Olivet, and that's a, you know, Chinese people really value education, so they definitely look for a higher ranking school. And so there are quite a few Chinese people living in that district, and there are some others also. Clayton's another one, but I don't want to pinpoint or,
sure,
you know, be whatever. But there are lots of good school districts in St. Louis, so really they are spread out quite a ways.
So they, one of the things that they look for then when they're looking for, if they're here to stay for a while and they're looking to buy a home, then education, as we've talked about already, is so valuable, so important to them that they're going to make a commitment to a home in a place where they know that the education is going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
What about Christian education? How is that received among Chinese culture? I don't know. Christian schools in China, well, like in Taiwan or in Hong Kong and other places, how are Christian schools and Christian education received there? And likewise, how do families look at Christian education, Chinese families look at Christian education when they come here to the U.S.?
In Taiwan, Concordia Middle School, which is an LCMS mission school, mm-hmm. they're big drawing card is English, and so people want to go there. I don't know if they still have a waiting list, but they have in the past had mm-hmm. waiting lists. As far as international Americans or American schools in Taiwan, the drawing card would be that they have English education also, and that most of them require a foreign passport, which would be what I'm saying by foreign passport would be non-Taiwan passport. So if their kids were born in, you know, America, or when they were here studying for a year or whatever way, then that would work. In the United States, most people, I think, do not even consider Christian education unless there's something special that has drawn them to that school. One thing that's been helpful for Light of Christ is that we are in ministry with Emmanuel Olivet, and Emmanuel has a preschool starting with 3-year-olds full days and then 2-year-olds half days. And because Light of Christ members are members of Emmanuel, there have been several of our members who have come to the preschool. And then one family decided they were going to continue sending their children to Emmanuel. Another family said had been going to another Christian school, and then they decided to send them. But then there's another family that just moved, and they said Christian education is really the way to go because they were not happy with what the kids were learning in public school from a Christian perspective from the state they moved from. And so I think that, you know, that influence may help in, you know, to promote Christian education at our church.
Sure, sure. All week long, we're talking about cultural diversity and primarily helping parents with those awkward moments when a child says something embarrassing, like, oh, that person sounds funny. You know, Daddy, that person sounds funny, or she looks different than us. What are good ways to handle that? What advice, Pastor Paul, do you have when a parent has a child that says something like that? You know, when they're looking at someone from Chinese culture and they say that person looks different, or that person looks funny, or sounds funny when they talk. What advice do you have for that American parent to help them help their child understand cultural differences?
I would say we need to appreciate and thank God for each individual, because that's all God created. That's all unique.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is the same. Even the God's created is all different, all beautiful. We need to use our attitude to appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Becky, with about a minute, what are your thoughts on that? Your advice to parents?
Well, I think to put it in perspective, we could say to our children, well, maybe they came from a different country just really recently. I wonder if they have any friends. Maybe we could, you know, ask them if they would, you know, just be friendly to them.
Mm-hmm.
And not be afraid. And I think a lot of people, a lot of Americans are afraid because they say, oh, I don't know how to speak Chinese or whatever language they assume that person is speaking. And being friendly doesn't always require language.
You don't have to learn Chinese. You don't have to know it right away just to make that connection.
Right. I mean, definitely the language does help, but we can smile at them. We can offer to open the door for them, or make a play date with, you know, say, hey, do you want our kids to play together or something like that?
Sure. And little kids don't even have to speak the same language in order to play together. That's so true. Well, I really appreciate both of you spending time with us today and taking time out of your busy schedule, and so thankful for the work that you're doing here in St. Louis to tell the good news about Jesus to people from all over the world. And it's valuable what you've shared with us today, so that families can learn about Chinese culture, so that they can do exactly what you said, help little kids learn about that and welcome a new friend. So thanks so much, Pastor Paul and Becky Shaw, for being here today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.